Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Joel Elkonen. He is the co-host of the Benzinga Pre-Market Prep Show. Joins me on a regular basis every Tuesday to recap some of the stocks that are moving and some of the broad sectors that are being talked about. And we're going to start off with the U.S. equity markets here, Joel. One of the headlines that's been running and in front of me a fair bit this morning is that the Dow is coming off a stretch of being down 5 weeks in a row. This is the longest weekly down stretch that we have seen since 2011. And really, when you take a step back and look at what those 5 weeks look like, to me, it has not been an aggressive move down. We're down maybe 5% from 5 weeks ago when the market did start to roll over. To me, you would think that somebody trying to make this comparison of the last time the Dow was down that much, that you would see more of a plunging market than we actually have seen. What's your takeaway from, first of all, that move from this last 5 weeks and the fact that, you know what, 5 weeks in a row, since 2011, that's quite a few weeks in a row. Do you put any credence in that data?
Just to address both of these issues, and Corey, thanks for having me on today to begin with. First of all, the market was at all-time highs when that period started. And, you know, in the midst of the earnings season, along with the trade talks, market at all-time highs. It gave some latitude to take a tougher stance on the China issue. And basically, after a pretty good earnings season, that's what, you know, brought us off, you know, that all-time high. To me, I'm looking at the lows that we had, not from last week, but the prior week, to be the key to more upside. And, you know, if you want to look at it as glass half full or glass half empty, in 2011, you did have a, you know, that prolonged, you know, down period after that. But later in 2011, you put in, you know, some monthly lows that have never been reached. So it's, you know, if there is selling, there could be more downside. But if you're looking at it from the 2011 perspective, you know, we could be, you know, be a necessary correction from the all-time highs and putting in another foundation for another rally higher.
Yeah, in all fairness, it seems like every time we get a bit of a sell-off in the U.S. markets, it is taken as a buy-the-dip mentality. Do we have any reason to not expect that again? Has anything major drastic changed?
I mean, I guess, you know, from the fundamental perspective, I mean, it's just how long it takes to get a, you know, a deal done with China, how it's going to be affecting the U.S. companies. I mean, each quarter that it goes on, it's going to have, you know, more of an effect. And so I think that's probably more important than anything that you can look out, you know, look on a chart, identify a point is, you know, let's get this behind us, get the U.S. companies back to focusing on, you know, better products and more R&D instead of have to worry about, you know, adjusting their production schedules to, you know, to meet, you know, lesser demand if this thing continues to drag out.
Yeah, this trade war cloud seems to be sticking around for a while.
That's it.
But then on the flip side of that, any correlations to the bond market here? We continue to see yields moving down. The 10-year's closing in on 2.25% now, trading right about 2.27%. This is put forth as a reason, too, that money's still relatively easy. People are still, in a way, expecting the Fed to cut rates sooner rather than later, at least in my eyes, not that I believe it. This also has to help support these markets, doesn't it?
So, for sure. I mean, if you look at the Fed funds rate, I mean, it's almost a foregone conclusion that they were going to have one or two hikes lower. I just, you know, look at it from, you know, you go from, you know, tapering to, a quick reversal and already easing. I just think it's too slippery of a slope, the Fed, to go down right now with the way the economy is. I mean, you want to use that, you know, the quantitative easing, you know, at a time in crisis, a time when you need it. And maybe there's a crisis looming on the horizon that I don't see. But the way they're factoring the next rate cuts, I just don't see it. We'll see what happens, you know, with the unemployment data coming out soon in June. For May, you can see different factors, but boy, oh boy, if the Fed, you know, goes down that path, then I think I'd really, really have some reservations about being in this market long term.
Yeah, it would, I think, be a bit of an overreaction for the Fed to do anything soon, just because, look, the markets aren't showing us that, and still the data in the U.S. does remain relatively strong. Yes, other countries are struggling, but the Fed needs to also pay attention to what the U.S. markets are telling them and how they continue to more or less kind of buck that trend from what other markets are doing. Let's also talk about the Bitcoin market, though, because it's finally come back to life, and there's been a bounce. Bitcoin now, it's over 8,500, trading really close, actually, to 8,700. We saw a big move over the weekend. What are some things that you look at in the Bitcoin market?
I mean, right now, I mean, if you can't find any value for the currency, you have to trade it from a technical basis. And it hung out between 3,000 and 4,000 for the longest amount of time, perhaps got all the sellers out of the market. You had a technical breakout over 4,000. Markets continued higher. I think that if any of your listeners want to be serious Bitcoin traders, then they need to give up their weekends. You have a lot of big moves over the weekends when there's less liquidity in the market. You have a kind of like a buy-driven market where you have buyers and then you have sellers of their longs, whereas you don't have natural shorts coming in to value, to keep a little bit of a lid on the market. So when the futures are closed over the weekend and you don't have the ARBs in that are going against the futures, then it's kind of like free reign here. And, this happened back in Thanksgiving in 2017 when it had its big leap. And now you've seen the last two big moves have been over the three-day, long weekends or Saturday when there's liquidity. So, there's nothing wrong with it. If you have enough, gunpowder to come into the market and move in a certain direction, then, if there's not sellers to offset you, then the price is going to go in that direction. And it's very, very hard to short Bitcoin through the conventional exchanges. So that's what you have. If you want to be a full-time Bitcoin trader, then you need to give up your weekends.
No, I'm good. Thanks. But it is an interesting market to watch as we have started to see some volatility come back in. And hey, you have those technical traders that have targets literally all across the board. So I don't know where it's going, but very curious to see the movements.
Seems like
happening.
10,000, it seems like, 10,000. I mean, that's not a really a bold call. That's only $1,300 away. And from a longer term perspective, if you want to look at the move, and I just look at this because I look at basis to futures, you've had a move from, let's just call it 20,000 down to 3,000, right? So $17,000 decline, a 50% retracement of that, gets you right back at like $8.5, $9, and that takes you up to 12,000. So markets don't go straight down. They don't go straight up. Bitcoin did go straight up for a while, had a meaningful retracement, and now it's retracing the validation of that down move. So technically, there's going to be more sellers on the way up this time because there's a lot of people that bought this at, 10,000, 11,000 on the way down saying, oh, if this gets back to 10,000, I'm out. Whereas before, when you had the run, everybody's like, why should I sell this? There's no resistance. It's keep going higher until after the fact. So, technically, you can't say anything bad about it. Fundamentally, if you know how to value it, then you're one step ahead of me.
Yeah, one step ahead of a lot of people, because it all depends if you're talking to a bullish or a bearish case for Bitcoin. Their targets, as I said, they far exceed just that $10,000 level, which it seems very much in the realm of possibility right now. But let's also talk about what's going on in the oil market, too. Oil has been a market that was running higher, and a lot of geopolitical concerns, I think, were helping to support that market. But in the last about week to two, it started to sell off now. We are getting a little bit of a rebound today, but you know what? We are coming up to the summer driving season. We are coming up to typically a stronger time for the oil sector, but I'm still hearing a fair bit of negativity. Where do you stand?
You had a very, very nice rally, right? From the end of 2018, we had that $43 low. You got up well into the 60 handles. So once again, you know, you have a big move and a big commodity like that, that $22 move. You know, there are retracements in the market, and this just could simply be a retracement of the big rally that you had earlier in 2019. I mean, that is that 20-some dollar move in that short period of time lent itself to some sort of correction. If OPEC, you know, these guys just can't resist, you know, the frackers can't resist when you have that kind of run up to, you know, over $60, well over $60. I mean, they start priming those pumps again and, getting as much production as possible out there once it gets above its cost of production. So, it will get to a point where some of these guys, you know, under $60, maybe some of the frackers and other are no longer profitable. Boom, they'll pull the supplies back off. And then, if demand stays steady, then you get a rebound. But pretty much just following OPEC. And then also, you know, if the economy, if we're going into a recession, yada, 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 who needs oil for energy? So I think that also has been a factor. A couple of the big stocks in the S&P 500 are oil stocks. And ExxonMobil has been basically straight down since its last earnings report. So I think that's also another factor in the market. Technically speaking, you know, you had that low from last week at 57.33, and you're making your slow rebound. So actually two lows in the same area. Let's just call 57.5 your major rebound, your major support in crude oil futures.
Okay. Joel, great chatting with you. I always enjoy touching on a number of different sectors and even specific stocks sometimes in terms of what is moving. It's, again, a very interesting market, and I still find a lot of range-bound trading going on. But until you look at what's going on. Yeah, until you look at what's going on in the yield market, that's not range-bound. That has been straight down for yield. Yeah. So that's also a telling sign.
And I just want to mention real quickly, my partner and I, Dennis Dick, will be out in New York City on June 20th for the first Benzinga Trading Summit. And we're going to be talking about, you know, trading, investing, swing trading, inviting a lot of great people that I've been involved with here since been doing the show with Benzinga. So it's going to be a great educational opportunity if anybody wants to check out the live trading room there. That's a separate ticket. They can just go to bzprofit.com.
All right. I will post a link to that as well, just for ease of use for all of our listeners. And hey, Joel, great chatting with you. Thanks again for your time, and have a great rest of your week.
Okay, thank you.